When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to The Treatment Room with Tess and Lauren, the podcast by estheticians for estheticians and those who seek to learn about their own skin from a professional's perspective. We're diving into our whys as licensed skincare therapists, sharing in our career journeys and separating the gimmicks from the real heroes in skincare. Welcome to The Treatment Room.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to The Treatment Room with Tess and Lauren. This is Lauren, and I'm here with my co-host, Tess. In this episode, we have the true pleasure of interviewing Joelle Lee. Joelle has been a highly regarded esthetician in the aesthetic space for 20 years. She's founded her own education courses called Joelle Lee Advanced Aesthetics Training, written two best-selling books, and is a specialist in chemical peels and treating multicultural skin. We had the absolute best time talking with Joelle. She has so much information to share, and we really hope that you guys enjoy the episode. So without further ado, we'll get into the episode. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Treatment Room podcast. We are here today with Joelle Lee, and we are so excited to have her with us. So thank you so much, Joelle, for coming on.
Thank you for having me. This is a true pleasure.
Yay. Wonderful. So yeah. So for those of our viewers or listeners who haven't met you before or aren't familiar with you, can you give us a little bit of an overview of your aesthetics background and kind of how you got to where you are today?
Well, I've been doing this now for a little over 20 years. I actually started my career in my 20s, and I started it in Chicago. I was fortunate enough to go to a school where I actually had a Sedesco-trained instructor and a physician that came in and did our anatomy and physiology. So even when I decided to become an esthetician, I was actually in college, but I was majoring in business, and I was also a theater major.
Wow.
But I was tired of waiting tables, and I was like, I love beauty too, and maybe I should do this. I was seeing an esthetician who was encouraging me to go, and she was telling me that, you know, you can do this and go to college as well. You would be able to work your own hours and this and that. And she said, you already love beauty and you love servicing, so, you know, it may be a really good fit. And so, you know, when I started school, I was so passionate about it. I just really fell in love with it. And I really felt like all the planets lined up correctly for me. And mm-hmm. when I say that, it was just everything was happening in such a way, like I was always kind of ending up where I should be. Because even though I started at that school, they said, this is the first time the teacher has taught. This is the first time we're going to have a physician. Everything was the first time. Right? Mm. But it was really the right time for me. And what happened during that process was I really started thinking about medical aesthetics. Mm. And, you know, being an esthetician really had not been around for a very long time. I think in Illinois, it had only recently had become an actual license separate from cosmetology. And there were still many states where you had to become a cosmetologist to even be an esthetician. So I was even fortunate to be in that state at that time. And when I left there, I ended up working for that same physician and training with that physician for 4 years. We worked at a hospital in a burn unit. We worked at his own practice, and then I helped him build a medical spa. And he also had a specialty in treating skin of color, which he trained me on as well. And my training with him has just been so unbelievable for me. I'm still teaching classes on the material that the teacher had, I mean, that the physician had shared with me and trained me on. And then at that time, the physician I was working with was a plastic surgeon. He was African-American, and most of our clientele was very high end. And I primarily saw people of color as my clients, but I really wanted to learn more about laser treatments, and I wanted to expand my client base. And before, you know, I know most people know me by being the esthetician to Michelle Obama, but I actually met her working for that physician and met her within weeks of graduating from school. So what people don't know is that she was one of my very first clients that I had.
Wow.
And so, you know, people think it happened when she became first lady, but in actuality, she was somebody I was practicing on. So,
holy cow.
Many years before.
No pressure.
Right. So, but at that time, you know, she's Michelle with a funny last name. Okay. Mm. There's no like other stuff going on. Okay. So, but I decide that I'm going to help. There's a new medical spa opening in Chicago, and they're going to open 7 locations. And they were a medical spa that was primarily going to be doing laser. And they hired me, and this laser company, I was the only African-American in the company and the only one at each location working. However, they did have a laser specific to skin of color, which I could operate, but they were able to teach me about all lasers at that point, the DR lasers, IPL, everything. Hmm. And so then my clientele was predominantly not people of color. So I spent another like 4 years doing that. So, you know, those two experiences really gave me a full scope of the entire industry, what was needed no matter what. And I felt most confident. I'm probably coming around my 10-year mark, and I'm feeling incredibly confident that I can treat anyone, you know, and whatever the condition at this point. So,
right.
It's also at this time that Barack Obama starts running for president. And even when I had started to work at the laser centers, I was not in contact with them. And then, of course, she started running. And the funny thing was, I was just kind of like, maybe I should just prepare to move to D.C. Mm. You know, I mean, I know her. I treated her. And maybe for whatever reason, you know, if they were to win, she would want me to come. I'm just going to get ready. I don't, you know, I don't know, but I'll get ready. And I really made all my decisions that way. I would kind of, whatever that I really desired or wanted, I would just prepare as if it were going to happen. And I also wanted to create a product line. And I was already starting to think about, am I going to want to be an esthetician another, you know, 10 years or another 20 or 30 years, you know, I was very much like, what are some other things I can do with my license that would bring in additional streams of income, but would also evolve me in the industry? And so he wins the election, and I'm in the process of developing the product. And that's when, boom, I'm called to go to D.C. And then I ended up in D.C. So now I'm in D.C. with no clients, but one special client. And
extra special.
Right. I have a product in development, but I do start working at a medical spa there. But the products really take off. And what happened with the products where I had them about 7 years, and they were in select spas, as well as the one in D.C., but I was just so unhappy with it. I did not like anything about running a product business. I loved creating products, but did not enjoy the business of product or people carrying them. And although that was the most successful thing going on with me, I was like, I gotta get a way out of this now. Okay, because all my decisions had really done well for me up until that point. Okay, so I said, okay, this was not, you know, one of my better decisions. And I tried to stay in it as long as I could, trying to find happy. You know, maybe next year I'm going to be happy.
Yeah.
And then I got married, and then I had my son, and then I took time off the first year to be with my son. And it was at that time that I stopped the products. And also during that time, I had decided that I would want to start writing more, doing articles and things like that. And then I started to be asked to speak at conferences. And then I fell in love with the actual speaking of conferences, because that was taking me back to the days of being on stage. It really was. I come out, it's all these people, I do my monologue, so to speak. And then, you know, I go home, but it's like, well, I love the teaching. I really, really fell in love with the teaching. So I'm back working with a physician at the time, and I do a spa conference. And a lot of the people who attended are asking me to write a book, because one of the questions that I was asked all the time was how to treat skin of color with chemical peels and lasers. Mm-hmm. And I had done mentoring for years for estheticians, and that was always something that came up. They felt as though they did not get that education in school.
Yes.
And they were really seeking someone that would offer classes or teach them or mentor them regarding treating skin of color. And that's how the book was born. So the Multicultural Skin Treatments book came while we were still living in DC, and that was in 2018. And that is where I am now. I have done a tour for 2 years. Unfortunately, my tour came to a stop due to coronavirus. But I've created an entire online digital platform, and I've decided that I'm not going to return to the treatment room. I have had tremendous success with the book and the courses, and also still doing the live and in-person workshops as well. And so I wrote, when I was on that tour, everyone was asking me to write a book about the business of aesthetics and how to generate the clientele and how to maintain longevity in the industry. And then the next book was born, and that was the Esthetician on a Mission workbook. So right now, you know, we've just recently moved to North Carolina. I didn't want to start the career over again here. I just want to keep growing my educational business, which is Joelle Lee Advanced Aesthetics Training. Yeah. And right now I'm just have the online platform, of course, until the pandemic is over.
I think the internet is a beautiful thing, and it's giving estheticians some big opportunity to do things beyond the treatment room and really scale their business as you've done.
Yes, I think that these types of times will make you come out of comfort zones.
Yes.
And it will help you to be more creative. This was my goal all along. What happened to me was I really love when I'm in person teaching. There's nothing like being in person. And I thought about the online element of it, but I just said it's not the same. And then all these people from all over the world were like, I've always wanted to take your class, you know, now I can take it online. And I really had not opened up and really made it happen until I was in a situation where I had no choice. So honestly, I think I'd still be on that tour had this not happened. And that's what I mean when I say, it's amazing what you'll do, how creative you'll get, and how you'll come out of your comfort zones or think out of the box when faced with something like this, or at least something you can't control.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that, you know, thinking outside of the box, as you're saying, is really important to estheticians now, but also always, because I think it's so easy for estheticians to feel like they're
kind of stuck in a box. They have to do facials and lashes and spray tans, you know, whatever their usual is. I think it's hard for them to think outside of that and find ways to, you know, either transition their career or add something extra into it. So I think that, you know, speaking on being flexible, and you don't have to do facials for the rest of, you know, your career, which is, I've done the same thing as you have. I used to do facials and treatments, and now I'm not anymore. So I think that letting estheticians know that, like, you know, you're not stuck in that box is an important point.
But in all fairness, I do think that there are estheticians who that's really what the dream is. You know,
right,
of course.
You know, I meet estheticians where they want to be in the room. Servicing mm-hmm. the client is what they are most passionate about. And they can get very uncomfortable about doing other things outside of aesthetics. So what's really important is, how do you bring in your other interests?
Right.
And that's what I did. You know, when I look at my entire trajectory of my career, everything had a necessary stop to it. And it's all mm-hmm. kind of became this thing right now, which I don't even know where this is leading to, but I know that it's a necessary stop.
Right.
Okay. So all of my interests right now, I'm utilizing. Everything that I love to do, how I like to do it. This is the happiest I've ever been in my career.
Well, I'm happy to hear that. I think it's.
And it's really because it gives me everything I love to do and everything that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
So if I were to talk to an esthetician, I would say, she might say, hey, I definitely don't want to get in front of people and teach a class.
Right.
Right. Like, she might say, no, I never want to do that. And I definitely don't want product line, Joelle. Okay. So, you know, okay. But I would say we all have more than one interest.
Yes.
And is there a way you can marry them?
Yes.
Right.
That would be more of how I would look at it.
I like that perspective a lot because we're all multifaceted and we all have different interests. And it's important, I think, to check in with yourself, ask, what else could I maybe be doing? Do I like being a little bit creative? Do I like, some people love that educational piece, and that's what really lights their soul on fire. Some people, you know, want to be in the treatment room all the time, and that's for them. But I think you just have to continuously check in with yourself.
Yes. And you know, you should try things that you think you may want to do. Like, yes. I said, I tried the products and then I went, you know, I don't like this. You know,
well, you tried.
But I'm not wondering about it.
Right.
I'm not wondering what could have happened about it.
Yeah.
And I always say, you can always go back to what you were doing. Hmm. So you might as well see the other thing. You might as well try the other thing. If you don't like it, turn around. But there will be something you can take away from that experience no matter what. And you will never have to wonder how your life would have been had you done it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's how I look at things. I was scared to death to go online. I just felt I couldn't convey it the same. I had all these things. I was trying to talk myself out of it. Okay. Then I got in it and I went and I did my first webinar and it was like, this is great.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I still can connect with people. So I'm so happy that I did it, but some things you're going to love, some things you're not going to love, but there isn't one thing that I have done that I couldn't take something away that made me better.
Yeah. So I mean, that's a super important point, I think, and something that, you know, a lot of estheticians, we can feel, I think, a little fearful of taking a leap, just people in general. And so taking a leap and trying, and like you said, like never having regrets and not, you know, wondering is so, so, so important.
But fear isn't fear of the thing. Fear is the uncertainty.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
And the main reason you're not doing something is you don't know the outcome of it. That's really the only reason you're not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And if I guaranteed you an outcome, you would have no problem doing it.
I think it's so.
So the fear is not of the actual move you want to make or the things you want to do. It's you want a certainty of what is going to happen to you doing it.
Which is never guaranteed in life. And I think it's...
Exactly. And that's why I say you might as well just go on and take the leap.
Take the leap.
Because you don't have... You think you have control where you are now. And we just all discovered that that wasn't true.
Yep.
So right. That's my point exactly. You were thinking, I'm not taking any risk. I know for sure what I'm going to make. I have certainty where I'm working. Mm-hmm. I have certainty. And then life happened to you. Mm-hmm. And you had uncertainty. So it's not real when you believe that you have certainty not taking risk. So my whole point is, if I'm going to have uncertainty anyway, right? Well, mm-hmm. whether I take a risk or not, I might as well take the risk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just easier to make, you know, excuses. I don't have the money. I'm, you know, like you said, I'm comfortable here. I can stay here in my bubble for the next 2 years rather than if I venture out here, then I have to, you know, figure out a business plan and do this. It's more work. So it's easier to tell yourself, I'm scared, I don't have the money, XYZ excuse.
That's true. And I just think that still gets back to you and how you feel about yourself in general.
Yeah.
That's an internal, how you talk to yourself. And that's a
whole nother episode.
You know, and because I've been coaching and mentoring estheticians for years, and the common thread with all of them is some level of low self-worth, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. low self-esteem at times.
Sure.
And I have to spend the majority of that time building them up just to hear and receive what I'm saying.
Yep. Yep.
So again, movement or feeling stuck comes from your learned beliefs and what you're saying to yourself, what you really believe about yourself.
Mm-hmm. That's so true.
And usually you will talk yourself out of something. That's why I say, you know, people will talk and talk and nothing's even happened. And they'll talk you all the way to it not happening, right? You'll go... But you didn't even do anything. Like, but what if this happens? And what if this happens? And then what if this happens? And what if this happens? And you're like, but nothing's happened.
What if it works out?
You're not doing anything.
Right. Yeah.
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 Gosh, that is so me. I'm so that person. I think about every scenario. And I go down all the roads. Yes. And then it's like, nope, not worth it. Too risky.
And then what happens is you get so overwhelmed by those thoughts, you do nothing.
Sure.
And you stop. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think wasted time is, you know, it's a big thing because you spend, and of course I'm the biggest culprit, you spend all this time thinking, when if you had just, you know, made a calculated act, by that time, you could be well down the road onto your, you know, best case scenario, or you could have realized it doesn't work, so we're going back. I mean, you know, it's just kind of, you end up wasting more time than if you had just taken the step mm-hmm. in the first place.
But I coach my students that to come out of anything like that is action.
Mm-hmm.
A to-do list.
Yes.
And you taking action. Action can take you right out of that mindset. Even if it's, I'm only going to do 3 things this week to get closer to my goal, mm-hmm. it takes you away from all that negative talk. And when you start to see progress, you get farther and farther away. So I'm always teaching about, to me, you know, I have a motto. It's make a decision, take action, and follow through, or see it to the end. Anyone coming into my coaching and mentoring program, I'm like, first thing we got to do is make a decision. If we can't do that, mm-hmm. there's no reason for me to be here. Okay? So we got to make a decision. What are we going to do? The next step is to take action. But sometimes what happens in the action part of it is obstacles, challenges come. And maybe we stop. And that's usually when you have to keep going. Mm-hmm. See it through to the end. So if you're a procrastinator, if you are thinking negative thoughts or saying negative, having negative talk with yourself, or just not feeling like you can do it or not as confident, take some level of action to get some momentum.
Yep, I love that.
It will change everything for you in action mode. And that's how I've done everything. I just stay pretty much in action mode. And people think, well, I would never think you would be, or that you would lack confidence. And I say, you know, I literally walk around with a little pee coming down my leg all the time because I'm scared. Okay. Like everything that I'm doing, I'm a nervous wreck. I was nervous to come on here.
Oh my goodness.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I can...
You know what I mean? I'm still nervous because I'm still, you know, I think what, and I don't even know if this is our podcast topic, but what I'm saying is that we just live in a society now where you're judged by everything.
Yeah.
And so I think now whenever you get ready to do something, everybody's going to have an opinion or say something. And I go, I'm always so nervous, you know, I'm always saying, oh, you know, how are they going to receive it? What are they going to say? What am I? And that's what I say, it may come off like I've got it together. Okay. And that may be the acting school. I don't know. But what I'm saying is, I'm just as nervous. I have the same fears. I go through the same thing, but I do it. And then I always feel better because I did it.
Yes.
Because I worked through those feelings and did it anyway.
I cannot agree more. I'm somebody who, I've always been that kid in class who is, you know, scared to raise their hand and speak out loud. And people are confused when they find out, and I think Lauren and I are similar in this aspect, when they find out I have like a podcast and a YouTube channel and they think, oh, you seem so outgoing. And I'm like, I'm scared at all times. I'm honestly, I'm scared of everything, but I try not to let it rule my life. And I don't judge other people for doing what they want to do. So I don't judge myself. And the moment I, you know, realize that, I think I had a lot of freedom.
Right. You have to just do it.
So take those little steps. I think that's a really great point you had. Weekly, those small things you can do to eventually get where you want to go. I think that's a great way.
I always look at, I never overwhelm my list because I like accomplishments.
Yeah.
Don't make a list that's so far, you know, reaching that you're now you're so overwhelmed by your to-do list, you can't do that. Okay, so now you're like, I put 30 things on here and I can't even, right? So I say, my number is all the time. There's three things every day I want to accomplish that will matter to my goals. So at night when I go to bed, I can have a win.
Yes, it gives you confidence when you've done the small things first, yeah.
I'm closer than I was yesterday. Yes.
Okay, Joelle, I'd love to pivot and ask you about more about your niche, because I know you're such an expert and we want to make the most of your time. So you said something about not getting enough training in school with multicultural skin, which I think is so true. It's not really something we spent a lot of time on. We studied the Fitzpatrick scale, you know, a skin type 1 through 6, but I think we know there's so much more complexity to it. Could you talk to us a bit about some of the differences in treating multicultural skin and your experience with that?
So one thing that I tried to get across is that the actual anatomy of skin is the same with all people. You know, if I'm studying the organ of skin, the organ is the same. Like, We have a liver, you know, we all have the liver. We all have the heart, you know. That's the same. The major difference is how the skin responds and reacts. Mm-hmm. And our melanin production. These are your major differences. And when it comes to skin of color, we obviously have more melanin production, okay? And studies say that there's a transepidermal water loss or a transepidermal water loss barrier function in skin of color or Asian skin, Hispanic skin, where that creates a very high sensitivity to things like chemical peels, laser treatments, very acidic or high acidic product. That's a response. And we also, of course, respond to inflammation by producing more melanin in areas or getting hyperpigmentation when there's very high inflammation that comes in contact with the skin too. Another difference would be that I know with African American skin, sometimes the sebaceous glands can overact more often. They can also produce oil up until the 60s or 70s. But I don't really like for people to say things like, is this product for, you know, a Black person, or is this product for just for people with skin and color? Is this, you know, I don't look at it that way. What you have to look at is the conditions, not the skin. Mm-hmm. Because this product, if in other words, if I have a cleanser, and I'm Black and you're white and we each make a cleanser, we're each going to start with the same formula, okay, to make this cleanser. Because there's just a basic formula for cleanser, okay? But then we both have to decide what we want the cleanser to do. And if that cleanser isn't addressing the top common conditions that someone of color faces, then it's not the most suitable cleanser for you. And I think that's where we miss it in skincare, is that is the treatment and product addressing the main concerns of conditions that people of color face? And from school on, you do learn it's a European-based method, and it's a European-based education. Mm-hmm. So a lot of your learning material, a lot of your treatment, and a lot of your product is going to be European-based and address the condition of European descent.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
I hope I answered the question.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I mean, it makes complete sense. Like if you have, you know, somebody who is more oily versus somebody who's dry, it's not that their skin is anatomically different. Right. It's just that they have different, you know, concerns or issues that they want to target with their routine. Yes.
And I think that's where we're missing the message. This isn't about, are my products for Black skin? It's these products address acne, hyperpigmentation, melasma, things that people of color are saying, hey, I need a product mm-hmm. for, right? Mm-hmm. When I made a product, I never said that. And the irony with my product line was everyone carrying it wasn't of color. Because it did the job. You know, it addressed the condition that was needed. I said, I focus on the condition of the skin, not the color. Mm-hmm. And there are not enough treatments and products designed around people of color. So I understand not only why they're not getting the education in school, but even when they get out of school, whatever they're being sold doesn't address it either. They're not even talking about those conditions. So it is going to be missing. It is going to be something you're not confident in. It's getting better. You know, ever since the George Floyd protests have started, every company now has some type of, know, now we are miraculously are going to do something about that. Okay, so, right. But for 100 years, you've never wanted to make a cleanser or make a moisturizer for what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of where we stand with so much that's going on in our country and in our world right now. It's just, we have, you know, we just have to see what.
But everyone wants to make a statement to try to make sure they don't lose business.
Yep.
Because they have not made a statement. Mm-hmm. But if your market is not someone of color and you've built your empire on another, you know, if, whether it's a European market or whatever, I'm okay with that because that was your business model. Mm-hmm. You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, don't decide now. Don't decide now. That wasn't what your goals were. Those weren't the plans.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's not as authentic.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's where the fine line is in the authenticity of everything that's going on right now, because everybody wants to make a statement and everybody wants, you know, to be included in the movement. And, you know, whether they have good intentions or bad intentions, everybody's saying something, and it's being able to decipher the authenticity in that.
Absolutely.
So, Joelle, you mentioned earlier that you were working with lasers, and then you were training in lasers that were more tailored towards skin of color. Is that correct? So how, I'm curious about that and how that differs, because I know that a lot of it has, I'm not trained in lasers, so I'm very naive on the subject, but I know that there's a lot of heat that goes into lasers. So can you explain kind of how those two differ?
Well, there's only going to be one laser that you can use on skin of color safely, and that's the YAG laser. Mm-hmm. And they consider that like the colorblind laser, because most lasers, like your Diode laser, is scanning the canvas and looking for the imperfection, right? So if I have a white canvas and I see a sun damage or a sunspot, zip, I'm going to zap it, right? So that was the whole issue with treating skin of color. It sees the canvas and wants to burn the canvas, okay? Mm-hmm. The YAG laser is not doing that. And it's a much, without me getting into every detail of how a laser works.
Right.
Some don't even come in direct contact with the skin, and it's more precise, but you are finding the imperfection in working that laser. It's a completely different approach than the Diode.
Interesting. Okay. So what is the, the outcome when using a YAG laser?
Most YAG lasers now, some do have a little discomfort to them. There are some that are painless, but there is no inflammation or downtime with YAG laser. If used correctly, you're not going to have to worry about hyper or hypopigmentation.
I think pigmentation is a concern, and I know I face it when treating skin of color, especially when it comes to extractions and chemical peels. The reactivity, I think, can be more of a concern, and it's not something we're always trained on in school since you specialize.
But you're right, because a laser is not an epidermis thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's make that clear. Things aren't happening on the outside, on the on the epidermis. These are going beyond the epidermis. And a laser, it can deeper penetrate without the YAG laser. I'm sorry, can deeper penetrate without overheating any epidermal melanocytes. the other lasers could activate them. When you're talking about chemical peels and extractions, that's epidermal. Yes.
Right.
But the lasers work much deeper.
Yeah, and that will, of course, vary state to state. In California, estheticians are not able to operate lasers. But I would love to understand more about chemical peels, Joelle, since that is your specialty. What types of peels do you find are most effective?
So I use buffered peels and medical grade peels, but my favorite type of peel is glycolic acid.
Now, everybody loves a little glycolic.
Yeah, glycolic. Now, even if my client, you know, has acne, their home care may have salicylic, but the treatments are primarily glycolic. And even when I teach that, so many institutions say, I was told I could only use lactic and malic acid on skin of color. And you're going to be waiting a long time for results if you're using that. Mm-hmm. So my primary peel of choice is glycolic, and I use that from 10% to 40% and from a pH 1.5 to a pH 3. But I have a step up approach, and what that means is that I like to build the resilience in the skin or resistance in the skin so that I don't have inflammation while they're going through the peel process or the peel protocols with a series of treatments.
Yes, I think that's key. Always just slowly increasing the intensity over time. Yes. Well, beautiful. Are there any mistakes you see commonly with the estheticians that you train when they're working with chemical peels?
I have had clients have things go wrong, you know, where I have fixed what happened.
Interesting.
Primarily, I would say the number one thing that's happened is I've been burned by a chemical peel or a laser. Those are the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I talk about that too in my class and in my book, and I show pictures of when it's went wrong. Some Diod laser companies will say you can treat, will say you can treat all fits with their laser. And then you will end up usually burning someone of color using it. Or causing hypopigmentation as well. If they scab severely or if it's deep, it can peel off and actually be hypopigmentation. But I would say in both categories, I've seen estheticians think that because they're someone of color that the skin is thicker or it can take more. Not having a step-up approach, but just going ahead and applying the peel, they have also caused burns. And I have just had to correct a lot of errors. But all of them have pertained around those two things. Now, I have also seen with extractions being done too aggressively, some scarring too. Well, this is how I feel about extractions in general. And this would be no matter what the, you know, color the person was. If you are using your entire muscular system and upper body strength to do extractions, which I see estheticians do, where their entire muscular system and upper body has put into this extraction. Okay? That's a big no-no. I don't care who it is. I've always been gentle with extractions. I think it's one of the biggest turnoffs about a facial.
Yeah.
Sure.
Prepping for the extraction is what's most important. My steamer is on from the beginning of a facial. They have steam for about 10 to 15 minutes, and I do an enzyme and exfoliation treatment prior to the extraction and still leave the steam on during extraction, and they barely feel anything.
I think that's a great tip.
If, like I said, if you have to use an extractor tool, you can definitely tear or cause hyperpigmentation on the skin. I still use it, but I'm only going to, you know, press it down a few times. I only spend 5 to 7 minutes on extractions. When people tell me I spent 20 minutes extracting her, I'm like, is she alive? I mean, where is she? And I just, if I have a person who has that many extractions or in that much abundance, I book them in a week to come back for an extraction appointment. Mm-hmm. I am not going to try to get every single one and cause that much discomfort on the skin. And if you're treating someone of color and they're continuously getting red, they will wake up with hyperpigmentation from the extractions. Mm-hmm. I just use the Kleenex and the 4x4s to do them. Some girls use Q-tips. And I use my extractor tool as needed. And, you know, in Chicago, we could use a lancet. So I would use lancets too. Mm-hmm. But I just think that sometimes it's too much pressure. I think that it's done for too long. And I don't think enough prep is done to make it easy on the esthetician or the client.
So if you see somebody and they have a high grade of acne and, you know, you don't have the time and you don't want to spend 20 minutes extracting them, you would likely give them some home care. You would recommend some products.
No, I would do some extractions that day, but I would probably be seeing them in a week.
Oh, okay.
I would still give them some home care, but if they have it that badly, I'm going to see them a lot more often. It at the, you know, 2 weeks was always my thing. So I'm going to see them biweekly until we get a hold on it.
Interesting.
I really like that. Yeah. I think a lot of times people will wait 6 weeks, eight weeks.
No, I teach a whole class on that. If you're trying to build a relationship, it should not be waiting 6 weeks.
Yeah, because
all of my new clients come back in 2 weeks.
Interesting. And what service do they get? So if they come in,
even if they get a facial, the whole point of the facial was to discuss what you want to be corrected. Mm-hmm. So in 2 weeks, we're going to start that correction process. We have a corrective program. I do not look at my book like appointments. My clients are in a corrective program, a maintenance program, or a prevention program. Mm-hmm. And in every program, there's at least 6 appointments performed at certain times. In the corrective program, the treatments are performed biweekly. In the maintenance program, they're performed once a month. And in the prevention program, they could be a combination of both.
Mm-hmm. So is there a timeline on your programs? Like, do you have them in a program, say, for like 6 months and then they go to maintenance?
Unless they're doing, let's say you come in and you have severe hyperpigmentation. It's your first visit. You had the facial today. We'll start your hyperpigmentation treatments in 2 weeks. And they don't have to be an hour-long treatment. Usually those treatments are 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. But I'm seeing them in 2 weeks. We already have a program. You're going to have 6 treatments biweekly over 3 months. Then you'll be going into the maintenance program and I'll be seeing you once a month to maintain the results from the corrective program. Mm-hmm. So when I talk to them, I talk about being in the program. I don't talk to them about their next appointment.
Mm-hmm. I think that's genius. I've never heard it structured like that as far as a program, as opposed
to
just...
I said, when it comes to our business, you know, I just took the business model from the trainer at the gym. Hmm. I go there. They show me around. They show me all the things they offer. They show me all the equipment, right? They show me all the treatments. They give me the free workout. You know, they do all that. Then they sit me down and they go, what are your goals? How much weight do you want to lose in 90 days? Right? And they go through all that and they go, well, this is what you got to do. You're going to have to come in this many days a week. You're going to have to come this often. If you want to reach it at each point, I'm going to evaluate our progress. It's the same thing. If a client comes in, you should be looking at her like you have a whole program designed for her. You're the expert. She's told you what's bothering her. She told you what she wants to fix. Have a plan for her.
Well, I think I just love the use of that word program, because like you said, I've never heard that in aesthetics before.
And that's how you create the relationship quicker. You create that loyalty and trust much faster, and they're more confident in you because you came with a plan, not an appointment.
Yeah. And I think it would allow you that opportunity to give them results and have them, you know, because a lot of times we get clients that they want immediate results and they don't understand why after three appointments they don't have, you know, perfect movie star skin. So allowing that time frame of the program, I think, also allows you the time to get the results, you know, without them kind of banging down your door for faster and faster results.
I really like to approach it, like I said, you telling me that you're suffering from adult acne right now, periodically, you're also having some hyperpigmentation due to that. I have a 6-session program I'd like to present to you. This is a biweekly program that can start in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. So when you propose that to them, do they pay up front for that? Or is that something they pay per
appointment?
That's all optional.
A lot of my clients would pay as they go. And I never had a problem with them coming. A lot of people like paying as they go. I did, because I was a solo Estee, I did not want to sell a lot of upfront packaging because I needed daily cash flow. Mm-hmm. So I can't have weeks of everybody that's prepaid. Mm-hmm. So I really liked the pay-as-you-go method. So I always had cash coming in.
Joelle, a lot of our Estees are in that transition phase where they're starting to graduate. If you had to sum up a piece of advice or give them one message, what would it be?
You're not ready to get your own suite.
They need to hear it.
This is my story. Okay. I am really, and I'm going to get my words together. This graduating on Tuesday and opening up your suite on Friday,
yeah,
I'm not an advocate of it. Take time to hone your craft. Find a niche.
Mm-hmm.
Find a specialty to separate yourself from the competition and learn it well. And not only when you find the niche and master your niche, how are you going to stand out? What is it? How are you going to make it yours?
Mm-hmm.
What is going to truly separate you from the competition and from, you know, what is going to make people want to just come back to you?
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the top things I would say, would be that you're not ready. And if you do want to have your own business, take some time to get some business acumen. Take some time to learn the business. Mm-hmm. Go somewhere and learn the business. You graduate, you don't know how to be an esthetician or run a business.
Right.
You're winging both of them.
Yeah.
I would at least want to know one of them, you know, but I don't want to get into that. That's a little touchy place for me.
Yeah. So, okay. So for our estheticians who are going to take your advice and they're going to get a job at an already established spa.
Okay, everybody's going to take Joelle's advice.
Yes. Don't go renting a space.
There's going to be some girls on this call that said, but I already have my lease already.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I got that on the second day of school.
And to them, I would say you just have to go the extra mile. And it's great if you have that courage of conviction. But now you need to really educate yourself. And
you have no idea what is going to be required of you.
No.
To be successful at this. And I know that you're on Instagram and Facebook looking at everybody with their chandelier in their room and all the lovely linen. But I said, why don't you look for someone with a client in the picture?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Everything that glitters is not gold.
Right.
And you are going to have to work hard.
Yeah.
And you are going to have to be a self-starter. There's so many things you're going to have to learn and do for yourself. Don't believe everything you see. They don't post failures on social media.
Right.
You're not in a rush.
Right. Right. Be patient.
Well, and I think that also your point about, you know, not getting your own suite, you know, the day you graduate is important, because when you're working for somebody else in a spa that's already established, you have that time to learn and you don't feel that like crunch pressure.
But you gotta learn the business. You got to learn the appointment book. You got to learn how it works. You got to learn what happens seasonally. You got to learn it.
You have to have
and
that.
And would you rather learn it? And I don't mean this, you know, for the owners on the, on this call, but would you rather pay to learn or have them pay? Right?
Yeah.
Do it under somebody else's business. Do it under somebody else's insurance.
Yeah. Less expensive.
I mean,
risky.
I'm just having a real talk with you.
Right.
You go out, you spend all this money, you make all these major investments, you don't know anything. It just goes on and on. Now, some make it, but let me tell you, that percentage is very, very low. And I'm not trying to be discouraging. Even those who make it have a very hard road to make it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm just saying what I'm saying. I want to encourage you, but I want you to work smarter, not harder. And you'll also learn what you like and don't like. You don't like everything. You don't like everything in aesthetics, you don't. You will discover what you like to do all day and what you don't like to do, and that will lead you to your niche.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But right now you're gonna graduate and say, we do everything here. I'm putting everything on my menu that I learned at school, but you're really not that good at everything.
Yeah, niche down.
Oh, I can go on.
Well, I wish we could have you for 2 hours because I'm learning. Joelle, my last question to you is, if you were to hire an esthetician and bring somebody on, what do you look for?
The first thing I look for is that they have a plan. Hmm. And that this is not a hobby. Mm-hmm. That they are seriously looking at this as a career move and not just something to do.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But they have to really present me with 2-year plan, 5-year plan, 10-year plan. And I got to know if I'm going to be able to align you with that.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do to help you achieve that? And who's really ready to learn?
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Those would be my top. That would be what would be impressive to me.
Yeah. So if you had somebody that had a plan and say their 5-year plan was to open their own space, so you knew.
I would totally help them.
You would? Okay. I love
that. And I would not, they could take their clients with them.
Oh, wow. That's very kind. Because I think a lot of estheticians are scared of that. Like that is their eventual goal, but they don't want to tell
employers. I've been in those situations and if you build something, it should be yours.
Mm-hmm.
And why would I not want you to achieve more?
Yeah.
I love that mindset because first it's an abundance mindset. It's not a fear. If she
I'm
leaves,
not gonna I'm not threatened by that.
Right.
I'm just not. I want you to be as successful as you can be, and I hope that I can help you.
I love that. I think everybody has to be happy. That's the only way you win. If somebody's not happy there because they're not doing what they really want to
but
do.
That's a very hard goal, though, because no matter where you're working, as long as you're working for someone else, you can't control all the people there.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get with you, right? You can monitor you. So you're going to determine if it's a good fit. Do what, you know, I say, when you go for an interview, interview them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just you being interviewed.
Yeah.
When I had an interview, I would call and see how they act when they, how do they treat customers when they call? Mm-hmm. What's it like to make an appointment here? What's it like? I even had a service. What's it like to be serviced here? Because will my clients even want to come here?
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Interview them. Ask them the questions that you need to ask to be there and be happy.
Yeah. I think that takes the pressure off too, because it's not so much, are they going to like me? It's, is it a match for both of us?
Am I going to like them?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Take your power back. I like that.
Because you want it to be a good fit too. It can't be one-sided.
Yeah. I think that comes with time and having more interviews.
And I said, if you want to negotiate, your money, if you want to negotiate commission, then have something you're bringing to the table to negotiate it.
Yeah.
Tell them what value you bring to them.
Yeah, I think that it's just such, you know, can feel like such a tricky game when you're first out of school, because, you know, we get questions a lot from estheticians who are like, you know, I'm trying to get my first job. I just graduated.
You know how I got my first job, and this is the honest God truth. I went there. When I went to that doctor's office, you know what he told me? He said, no, you're not going to work here.
Okay.
He said, I have an esthetician. I went back the next day. And he said, I told you yesterday that I was not going to hire you. I have an esthetician. I said, I am new. I want to learn. And at that time, I'm still waiting at tables. Well, I was like, can I just come here a few days a week and shadow you and your esthetician? You know, I just wanted to learn more on the medical side. Mm-hmm. He said, no. I came back again. And he walks in, and now I know everybody because I've talked to everybody at the front desk. Everybody knows me. So I'm sitting there talking to them, and he goes, come with me. And I'm like, uh-oh. And he takes me in this office, and he goes, are you going to be coming here every day? I was like, I just don't think that you've heard me out. I think you need more time. But I like it here. I've been here for 3 days now.
Comfortable.
I like it. And he said, he asked me some key questions. What do you want to do?
Yeah.
What do you want? Like, he asked me some key questions and I answered them. And he said, come with me. And I followed him around 4 years.
Wow. I love that. I mean, it shows your persistence in like what you want, and you know what you want.
And I end up opening a medical spot with him and everything and being his main esthetician. That other esthetician left, and he would always give lectures and say, somehow she conned me into a job. I still don't know how I'm still trying to figure out why she's working here. Because I told her she could not work here. And she's working here.
Oh my God.
So again, you have to present yourself in a way that would bring some value, even if it's, you know, you being able to tell them what you want to focus on now that you're open to training, that you want. You know, I love students because I get to mold them.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
When you got a 10-year esthetician who's set in her ways, good luck. Right? The student is ready. You know, they are excited. They're trainable. You know, it's just, will the client pick up that you're new? Mm-hmm. That's their concern. Mm-hmm. And I always say, you want to practice whatever that you want to impress them with and say, let me give you a service. I won people over by giving them the service. Mm. Just let me give you the service. Mm-hmm. Then decide.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
That, you've got to present something to someone.
Yeah.
But you know, on the flip side of that, there are so many people who have hired esthetician and have felt burned by them.
Right.
So a lot of times you're sitting across from a person who's on his sixth or seventh esthetician, mm-hmm. who's done damage.
He's jaded, right. Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's not you. It's, you don't have to take it personal. In other words, when you get the response you get, it's what he or she has been through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that makes sense. Cause when you have your business and you keep getting burned by estheticians
and it happens a lot.
Yeah.
Where they've bought all the equipment, they've done, you know, they've spent a lot of money too. And then the esthetician sits in the room on her phone.
Mm. Oh gosh.
But that's another podcast.
Amazing. So, well, I think that's a perfect place to kind of wrap us up. Joelle, you are so wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on with us. We would love to have you on again in the near future. So thank you again. We really appreciate it.
And thank you so much.
Joelle, where can our listeners find you on social media? Anywhere you'd like to, for them to find you?
So all of my online courses, books, trainings, coaching is at joellelee.com.
You see?
And on Instagram, it's joellelee_aesthetics training. And Facebook is joellelee advanced aesthetics training as well. But I also have a Facebook group, and that's Joellelee advanced aesthetics training and classes. So
love it.
Joellelee is probably all you have to,
to remember.
Just search that and we'll find you.
You just have to put in Joellelee. Yes.
Yeah. Cool. Perfect. Well, so we will leave all that information in the show notes below so that everybody can find her quickly. But again, just Google her if you need a little help. And thank you so much, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Joelle, for being on. And we will talk to everybody in the next one.
Thank you. Bye.